Et nous tournons à Puis sous l'âme et à Et nous tournons à
The singer, William Taguna, is from Kujawak in the Canadian Eastern Arctic Northwest Territories. He is singing in Inuktitut, one of the dialects of the Canadian Inuit. Inuit is the term preferred over Eskimo by the indigenous peoples of the land north of Treeline, a territory that comprises one-third of Canada's land and is home for 20,000 Inuit. Unlike Alaska, the Inuit of the Canadian Arctic have not yet achieved a land claim settlement with their federal government, nor do they feel they have adequate national political representation. In the early 1970s, Inuit Tapirasat, Canada's national Inuit organization, approximating in scope the Alaska Federation of Natives, suggested the creation of a new territory and government to be created in the eastern part of the Northwest Territories, where the Inuit comprise nearly 85% of the population. Elections held in November 1982 showed voters in the Northwest Territories overwhelmingly supported the creation of a new government for their homeland, to be called Nunavut, Our Land. Members of the Nunavut Constitutional Forum are negotiating with the Canadian government terms for establishing Nunavut, and at the same time, Inuit leaders are also negotiating Aboriginal land claims and taking steps to ensure that the Canadian Constitution protects Aboriginal rights. Nunavut, Canadian Inuit land claims, and the Constitution are all interrelated. Peter Jull, a political and constitutional advisor to Canadian Inuit organizations, now explains those relationships and the steps being taken to resolve the issues.
When the Inuit of the Eastern Arctic made their proposal for land claims, they wanted the land claims to fit in the context of a separate territorial government in their area. They saw the two as being absolutely, totally related. In fact, some Inuit leaders even today will say, when they're asked, what do you mean by Aboriginal rights, they say, we mean Nunavut. Nunavut, of course, means our land in Inuktitut, so it's a very potent and a very emotional term. The Inuit are looking for an opportunity to control their own futures, to have a stake and in the protection and management and ownership of their lands and resources. These are pretty fundamental things, and they're pursuing them in Canada through many means. And of course, the three principal means are land claims negotiations, creation of Nunavut in our area, and the national constitution work. But there are others. For instance, when we go to regulatory board hearings, such as the National Energy Board, to examine proposals for development in the Beaufort Sea or wherever, at that time, the Inuit are also making political statements because they have to push very strongly in those forums because they have no others. They don't have the kind of political structures in the North needed to achieve what they want. So they're pushing through a great many means, but certainly the three main ones are land claims, Nunavut, and the national constitution. Some of the objectives that the Inuit have had in the Nunavut work and in the land claims negotiations are also now being pursued at the constitutional level. Essentially, what we're getting at is saying, look, the Canadian legal system doesn't work for Native people. It doesn't recognize their use and occupation of lands. It doesn't recognize their legal values and their history. It's somebody's just come along and imposed something that suits his needs and almost eliminates Native people as a legal category. Okay, at the constitution level, we have a chance to rewrite the fundamental law of the country from which all other laws proceed. And therefore, it's a unique opportunity to reestablish the relationship between Native peoples and the immigrant populations from Europe and wherever else people came from. In other words, we see the constitutional talks not just as an opportunity to rewrite a legal document, but also as a forum in which Native people can discuss any and all their fundamental concerns, and then that forum can decide where they may best be dealt with. We have had some success already, and one of the things that was agreed in March 1983, at the first major conference between the Prime Minister, Premiers, and Native groups, was a section which is now being enacted, guaranteeing the land, giving land claim settlements, present and future, constitutional protection and constitutional status as constitutional documents. So this is a very important step. Its precise legal ramifications aren't totally clear. It's obviously very important symbolically. In the Northwest Territories, there are really two very distinct regions. South and west of the tree line, you have the forested area, which is inhabited, of course, by the Dene Indians. And, of course, to the north of the tree line, you've got the tundra and the area traditionally inhabited by Inuit, and where Inuit are still the overwhelming majority of the population. The Northwest Territories is one-third the size of Canada, just the land area, not counting the seas. And when you've got an area that large, it's not surprising that it doesn't fit nicely for administrative management. The Northwest Territories used to include areas that are now provinces in the south. In other words, it's the leftover part of Canada. It's the part of Canada that, when provinces were being carved out, this was the residual territory. And so now people living in that territory are saying, well, look, we really should have some jurisdictions that make sense, and it would make sense to divide the Northwest Territories into two, one area which is predominantly Inuit in culture and one in which the Indians would be more at home. And this idea has been around for quite a few years. In fact, the Canadian government itself proposed dividing the North in the early 60s. And at that time, it was dropped. There was a minority government, and it wasn't possible to get the thing accomplished. But in recent years, Inuit have been proposing it as a very important element of their push for land claim settlements. And although the Nunavut political work is being handled a little differently than land claims, the two are related. What we're looking at is a self-governing territory. In Canada, provinces have, of course, more power, but it's difficult to persuade the provinces, who have a veto through the constitutional amendment formula, on the creation of new provinces. Furthermore, there aren't any provinces in the north, so all we're looking at as a starting point is creation of a new territory with as much self-governing power as possible, with guarantees for the protection of Inuit language and culture, and to the extent possible, a share in resources, revenues, and in the management of resources. So in a sense, we're going for something less than full provincehood, but of course, given that provinces are the normal Canadian organizational form, one assumes that eventually there would be a province. Many people in the south, of course, say, well, there's so few people up here, why would you think that something like that could be viable? And there's no question that arguments like that weigh heavily with the Canadian government. The smallest province right now, Prince Edward Island, has about 110,000 people. Nunavut, if it were created today, would have about 19 or 20,000. So obviously there's a discrepancy there, even though Nunavut would also be the largest jurisdiction. In the past, northern Canada was administered in two parts. There was the so-called Arctic region, which basically corresponds to what is now Nunavut. It was administered directly out of Ottawa. Inuit were the population there. Programs were developed specifically for Inuit. The Inuit language was being developed there. In the western area, which was the area where there's been more settlement and more development pushed up from Alberta to the south, and in other words, in an area where there's more the classic Canadian development and settlement model, there was a separate administrative regime run out of Fort Smith in the Northwest Territories. So traditionally, the two parts of the Northwest Territories have been administered separately. Inuit felt that under the old system they were at least getting more attention for their unique needs. And certainly the two parts of the territories are very different. The Inuit area, almost every community, with one exception, is a coastal community. The life of the people is oriented towards the sea, and of course there's the Inuktitut language, which is a unifying feature. The communities are not connected by road, they all have similar lifestyles, and their interests are simply different than those of the Mackenzie Valley, which is much more a typical Canadian development model, where you've got north-south lines of communications and roads and so on. And it's just been felt by the people in the Nunavut area that they weren't getting the kind of attention they deserved. The idea of Nunavut isn't specifically ethnic. In fact, we go out of our way to point out that we're not trying to set up an ethnic jurisdiction. It's not going to be like an Indian reserve where it's only one group of people living there and no one else is allowed in and so on. We're not looking at that. We're looking at something in two parts, really. A Nunavut constitution that would create Nunavut as a political jurisdiction like any other in Canada, in the sense that it'd be open to anybody. But then the second part, of course, is a land claim settlement. The idea is that through a land claim settlement, Inuit would get an economic stake in the lands and seas that they've always used and occupied, and that special rights for Inuit as Inuit would be available or could be negotiated through the land claims, whereas Nunavut public government certainly would have special features reflecting the fact that the area is largely Inuit. For instance, the Inuktitut language would be given equal status with French and English and would indeed be the main language of daily life in Nunavut. And there would be a number of special features like that. So, in a sense, we're pioneering, we're pioneering in two senses with this Nunavut constitutional work. For one thing, as I mentioned, there's a land claim settlement that would be a constitutional document as part of Nunavut, but the main Nunavut constitution, of course, would be for everybody, so you've got a two-part situation there. But we have been doing something that is unique in Canadian history, where, as you know, the American Constitution is really a popular constitution. The people said, look, we're the source of sovereignty, and this is the way we want things. The Canadian Constitution follows the other model of the Crown devolving power and so on. So we've got a somewhat different situation. Finally, in Nunavut, we're making a popular constitution. We're consulting with the people, we're passing information around, we're working through television and radio to make sure people know what's going on and that we get their ideas. And because our meetings are broadcast, and or at least in part, it's sort of an educational thing. People are seeing how one develops constitutional forms, how one, what are the issues, what kinds of issues are important for governments. For instance, as you can imagine, many people in our small communities really don't know very much about constitutions, but they're learning a great deal. And strangely, here in the North, where we're supposed to be so isolated, I think people are getting a better understanding of what goes into the making of political structures and constitutions than many people in southern Canada, even in the large cities like Toronto. We certainly hope that southern Canadians aren't so uptight or whatever that they think that only people descended from European population should have political rights. But the Canadian Inuit, more importantly, I think, are saying, look, we're not trying to separate from Canada, we're trying to join it. We're trying to establish a political jurisdiction in a format that's familiar to Canadians, that fits within the Canadian system, as a means by which Inuit can start participating in Canadian life more fully. They can start participating in Canadian politics, sharing in the decisions and sharing in the social and economic life of the country and the benefits of that life. And Inuit are very sensitive on this point. They're very upset about going to Ottawa constantly and having to reassure parliamentary committees or government officials that really, guys, we're not trying to leave Canada, blah, blah, blah. We're not separatists. This continual business of our people having to assure their loyalty is really quite annoying, because the Inuit have always been here. The reason Canada has sovereignty in the Arctic is because the Inuit have always lived here. Canada uses the Inuit occupation of the Arctic to demonstrate sovereignty in international terms, and we think that if they're doing that, they could surely recognize for domestic purposes that the people who've always lived there have rights as Canadians too.
Peter Joel, political and constitutional advisor to Canadian Inuit organizations. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. This Chinook program was funded by the North Slope Borough Commission on Language, History, and Culture, the Alaska Humanities Forum, and KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM.